Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Disconnected from
jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bells ring, snowing and blowing up bushels of the jingle hop has begun.
It is the Savage jingle Nation, bell, the special pre-Thanksgiving show, the one I love the most. The reason I love this show the most because the prelude is always better than the performance, as you well know. And of course, or turn it off already. People cannot hear me over music. The brain doesn't work that way. You have to be a child under the age of 16 who grew up not eating anything with a face, who is deficient in various nutrients to be able to listen to music and hear voice at the same time. And then you can grow up and vote for Obama and believe in global warming and Santa Claus. I can read you the headlines. You've heard them all. You know that Obama is the biggest spender in American history for a first-year president. You know he spent nearly double what Bush did. You know that the man is out of control. He's like King Ludwig II of Bavaria. Look it up. He is King Ludwig II bankrupting the treasury. And you know, it's a shocking thing to see that he's going to do a special with Oprah Winfrey on ABC. It's as though he's hiding between two strong big women, Oprah and his wife, because he knows he's in trouble. He knows he's been found out. That's the end of the political show. Now I want to talk about how to cook a turkey. And that is because I cook the turkey around my house because I like to do it. I like the smell of the food in the house. I like the whole baking deal. Anyway, the thing is this. Most people don't know how to cook a turkey. On one hand, it's easy. You follow the directions, 350 an hour, you know, a certain number of minutes per hour, blah, blah, blah. And you get a turkey. What's there to it? Like everything else, there are tricks to the trade. For example, my housekeeper said, do you know that it's not a good idea to wash the bird? I said, what are you talking about? It's been done for thousands of years. She said, oh, no, I heard on a television show that it's not a good idea to wash the bird because you actually spread the bacteria around. I said, the doctor's a schmuck. Whoever has a television show and said that to you is a putz who never cooked a day in his life. Of course you don't just spray water on a bird. So let's start from the top. Beowulf, are you there? Beowulf is my producer.
Right here, sir.
Now, you're married with children, and you're going to cook your first turkey. Is that correct?
That's right. This is the first time my wife is laid up with kind of a hurt neck, so I'm going to be doing it myself for the first time all the way through.
All right. Now, don't be intimidated. There isn't there. On one hand, as I say, it's easy. It's very much like sex itself. And in other words, you can just do it, and it'll be done, or you can do it with finesse. So we're going to talk about finesse, Beowulf.
Fair enough.
Let us start with the turkey itself. Is it still in its original packaging material?
It's still in its packaging, still in the refrigerator.
How long has it been there?
It has been there for 2 days.
Here's what I suggest. When you get home tonight after the show, mm-hmm. you get a nice apron on, have a glass of whatever your beverage is, because okay. You're going to get soaking wet and you're going to mess up the sink. Don't worry about it. You know what you're going to do. Get the wrapping off.
Okay, got it.
Immediately. Unwrap the thing tonight. Don't do it tomorrow. And start to wash it. Now, you got to take out all of the giblets from the inside of the cavity. That's a given, right?
All the innards. Okay, right.
All right, make sure the innards are out, and because they're going to be rinsed separately now. I mean, sounds like a logical thing to do. Many people cook the turkey, not even know that there's the body parts are inside the thing. The organs are in there. They cook it with the bag on it.
Yeah, that much I know.
All right, fine. I'm sure you did. Now, you start to wash it, and you wash every aspect of the bird, under the wing, in the wing, under the leg, in the wing, in the cavity, till the blood stops running.
Okay.
Then rinse the sink out thoroughly, Beowulf, okay?
Got it.
So there's no longer any red in it, none of the goo.
Okay.
Now get out the kosher salt. If you don't have kosher, use regular, but the thick salt is the main thing.
Gotcha.
And you salt that bird in and out. Now you say, well, I don't want to serve salty food to my family. I don't want to raise their blood pressure. You're absolutely right. Uh-huh. but you're not going to be serving them a salty bird. What you're doing is a modified koshering of the bird, which has been used since the beginning of time to preserve meats rapidly, kill the bacteria on contact immediately, and in a natural manner. So you soak the bird with salt, leave it on only for a few minutes, Beowulf,
okay.
And then once again with ice-cold water, don't use hot water. You know why not to ever wash a bird with hot water, right?
That's going to add bacteria, right?
The hot water will actually possibly encourage bacterial growth, number one. The cold water will limit the bacterial growth. So, again, you're going to soak the bird, and you're going to wash the skin outside. You're going to wash the cavity inside. And then you're going to dry the bird. And then what are you going to do when you put it away tonight before you cook it for tomorrow?
I'm lost. I'm following your instructions to the letter, sir.
All right. So all you do now is simple. You dried the bird after you washed the salt off it.
Mm-hmm.
You've now killed the 99% of the bacteria on the skin and inside the cavity with the heavy salt treatment. You've washed it out. And now you're going to put some oranges inside the cavity of the bird.
Orange.
Why do I suggest oranges?
What? Yeah,
because
why?
Overnight, the oranges will add a certain flavor to the inside of the poor little animal that's died, that's dead in your refrigerator. It will suffuse the meat of the turkey even before cooking it.
Okay.
And then you could just salt it if you want, again, very lightly, if you'd like to do that tonight. And again, to protect the bird from a bacterial invasion.
Wow.
That's all there is to the starting point. Now, do you want to go into the cooking stuff?
Absolutely. Somebody told me that I should put stuffing in order to for it to cook properly. Is that correct, or is that a fallacy?
Well, if you put stuffing in it, it's going to slow the cooking down. You know that, correct?
Okay.
So that'll change the cooking time enormously because it sucks heat. Stuffing is a whole separate story, and I know you know how to do that with breadcrumbs and all.
Sure, right.
Did you already dry old bread?
I got a special mix for it.
All right, that's the okay. As I say, it's like sex, so you can do it in varieties. The easy, when you get older and you got finesse, you don't use the bagged variety; you make your own. All right, that's what comes with time. You'll see as you get older, you start to do things a little more finesse, and you're not going to use bagged stuffing next year.
Okay.
And after you pass the age of 40, you'll start really getting crazy. You'll dry the bread a week in advance. You'll see how it goes. By the time you're 60, you'll never make another turkey in your life. You'll only take them out to a restaurant.
One step at a time, sir, right.
Anyway, we'll deal with the cooking later.
Okay.
But I'm telling you what, Beowulf, it's simple and it's not simple because I've ruined turkeys over the years, and over the last 5 years I've become an expert. Turkeys, you know, an ordinary animal. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what we're going to do, Beowulf, for fun today on the Savage Nation. Just for a few minutes, we're going to stop worrying about Obama and his insanity. We'll stop comparing Obama to the King Ludwig II of Bavaria because it's too apt a comparison for the average person to even understand. Here is a man who is going to go to a global warming summit and ruin America's economy even further, even though it came out that the whole thing is a fraud through the emails that were hacked. Can you believe this, Beowulf?
Oh, my God.
How does he get away with living in such a bubble? How can the man march around in such a fraudulent bubble? 1-800-449-8255. If you have a favorite turkey recipe that you'd like to share with the Savage Nation, you can do it now. We'll play some Jingle Bell music because it's appropriate for that. Let's play Jingle Bell Rock. I still love that song, Beowulf. I want to hear a little bit more of it. Wait a minute, I'll be right back. I'm not going anywhere. No break.
Jingle bells swing and jingle bells ring, snowing and blowing a boot. What a bright time, it's the right time to rock the night away.
Get off already. Now, let's say you're going to do a turkey dinner tomorrow. You're a family person. You enjoy it. It's your happiest holiday. It's true for all of us, right? What if you get the cranks who are going to come to dinner with the dietary restrictions? I mean, I've had them over the years. I generally throw them out of the house. If they say I'm a vegan only or lacto-ovo or no gluten, that's the latest hula hoop now. Oh, no gluten. They think they've discovered something. I've discovered that I'm a celiac and I don't use gluten. I feel 1,000% better. The guy looks as fat as he did before the diet. Suddenly everything is better in his life. He thinks he discovered the holy rose, you know what I mean? No gluten now is the latest one. Then another one's lactose intolerant, no dairy. Another one's allergic to peanuts, and they start, did you cook anything in that soup? Did it have a peanut in it so much as a fragment of a skin of a peanut? Because if there's even a fragment, I'm leaving, and I'm going to sue you tomorrow. Then another one won't eat anything with shrimp. Another one won't eat anything with complex carbohydrates. Then another lunatic, usually the young emaciated girls who wind up in psychiatric wards by 19, they come there from junior high school and say, the mother says for them, oh, Audrey won't eat anything with a face on it. Oh, how cute. How sophisticated. The girl's wasting away like with a wasting disease. And no dark meat, someone will say. You know what I say? If you have such dietary restrictions, keep them to yourself. Eat what you can from the meal and don't make an issue of it. Don't make everyone look at you. You know what I mean? We're not that interested in all your problems. Now let's go on to the callers. 1-800-449-825. This is far more important. See, I knew I'd get a caller on the Navy SEALs being charged for punching a terrorist in the face. I knew that. I knew that we'd get a caller on Obama. I knew we'd get a caller on the Middle East. I knew it. I knew it would happen. But, yeah, I will throw it in the mix. I am so not interested anymore right now today. Swine flu vaccine may be available to all within weeks. I'm not taking it. You can take mine. Take my dose, please. If you want my dose, you can have it. Fewer Americans believe in global warming, poll shows. Best Buy ad touting Muslim holiday sparks debate. I will let that one go. Approval of Obama on Afghan war dives. Obama faces white flight. Duh. I wonder how that happened. I wonder how that happened since he had Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, Jeremiah Wright, and a few others in the White House. I wonder why there's white flight all of a sudden. Could it be because they are the largest majority ethnically in America and they're going to pay the most taxes? Is that possible? What else is in the news? Georgia church robber, sorry I'm poor. What's this? Oh, they're reviewing this guy's book. Who cares? Blogger accused of crime subpoena. I'm not interested. I'm just so not interested in any of this news. Rhode Island officers can now compel blood alcohol sampling from drunken driving suspects. The new law is welcomed by the law enforcement community. Blood alcohol sampling. I mean, they can draw blood now on the road? That's sort of very vampire-ish. I saw a TV show last night. I'm going to throw the TV out of the window because I had nightmares like you can't believe. I was bored. I was searching for a movie. Unluckily, I went through HBO, which is the most degenerate network in history. And as I'm going through, there's a show on. No, it wasn't HBO. I take it back. They're the most degenerate network in history, but it's not where I stopped. I couldn't watch the Repo show anymore. The slobs with their tattoos. I can't take it. How did they become movie stars? Lowlifes. All of a sudden, they're movie stars. Repo this. They look like circus freaks from Coney Island to me. I can't watch it anymore. First of all, most of it's staged, number one. Number two, I'm not a big fan of repossession people. They were never like my favorite human beings. They'd repo a car because you missed a payment. And suddenly they're a social hero? I'm searching, and I pass a show something, The Hidden Story of Housewives. So I said, well, what's this garbage? They pulled out an ugly broad, one of the ugliest I've ever seen in my life. I don't know, like Vera from Orange County or Orlando. She's secretly a dominatrix. I said, secretly a dominatrix? Just take a look at this woman. The woman doesn't have to be secretly anything. Her face says I'm a dominatrix. Stay away from me. But it gets worse. She puts on teeth, like vampire teeth, and goes to a club for psychos where she beats them up and whips them. I never saw anything like this in my entire life. I know that if there's a heaven, the people in heaven who were in my mother, they're looking down and saying, Michael, how could you... I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, so we can do the politics. Anyone could do that. I mean, I do it my own way. You know, UK terrorists, Obama the spending maniac. Senator Conrad, a Democrat, North Dakota, said that people who don't believe in civilian trials for terror should go somewhere else. We should leave the country. You believe what these communist leftists have become? We should leave the country because they believe in communism. Don't even call me on that. That's why I'd rather talk. Yeah, Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of our time, listen to this. He says the U.S. and Israel don't have the courage to attack Iran. He says this in Brazil. Maybe he's right. Maybe he is right. Maybe it's all over. So we may as well just talk about how to cook a chicken or a turkey. Chicago, Yosef, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
You're talking about turkeys and salt them. Does that pertain also to kosher turkeys?
Yes. In other words, even if the turkey is kosher, it doesn't matter. It is still subject to bacterial growth, and it must also be pre-prepared with a salting methodology in your kitchen sink prior to cooking it.
Thank you for clearing that up. I also thought I was listening to the Jackie Nation.
John, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, what I do with my turkeys is I take a little bit of melted butter, and I just rub it on the meat under the skin, all over the turkey, and that actually bastes itself while it's cooking.
Well, that's okay if you eat butter. I don't eat butter because I've been on a low-fat diet for 30 years, I've reached the point where I don't even like the taste of it. If you love it, you're not worried about high-fat, high-saturated diets, that's a good way to do it. I don't enjoy the taste of it. Secondly, the meat itself is so flavorful that if you preserve the heat properly, which we haven't even gotten to, the bird's not going to lose its flavor and its juiciness, by the way. There's many ways to do it. You want me to do this? You want me to do the news? What would you like me to do today? Anything you'd like me to do, I'll do. Not one caller out of a major city. I'm getting Yokel, Texas, Crackpot, Arkansas. I'm joking with you. Come on, you can take it. You're a big guy. You can take it. Global warming. I spent an hour and a half on it yesterday. It's a fraud. I love this lunatic. An actor goes on Fox News and starts screaming that you have no right to talk about it unless you have a PhD. So I have a PhD, so he'll say, well, it's not in the climate field. Well, it certainly is not in the news, that's for sure. I would say I know how to read scientific data, Ed. Unbelievable to me. They tell me to go to Nature magazine and Science magazine. They're all politicized, these magazines. They're all politicized.
Savage. Come on, let's turkey try.
All right, it's the Savage Nation. I'm giving you methods for ridding your bird of bacteria. I'm talking about turkey, of course. Ridding your bird of bacteria prior to preparing it for the oven, prior to insertion in the oven. I don't mean to make this so laden with innuendo, but the fact of the matter is everything is this. Freud was right. By the time you're five, it's done. 1-800-449-8. Freud said, I remember when I was reading him when I was young, that you are who you are at five. I remember I didn't like that. When I first read it at 16, I didn't like who I was at 5. And I used to, so I am who I am at 5? So why bother growing up? I mean, what do you mean you are who you are at 5? You can change yourself. He meant in certain fundamental ways. In that sense, he was right, Anyway, let's move on to the turkey here. I'm not going to do much politics because the stories are so depressing. They are so sickening and so depressing. We have King Ludwig II in the White House. King Ludwig was the king of Bavaria, the young king who inherited the throne. He bankrupted the Bavarian nation. Okay, this is what we have here, the King Ludwig syndrome. Mark it down, you heard it first here. I'm sure the Hem will get a blackboard out tomorrow with a picture of Schloss Herrenchiemsee. Ann Arbor, Michigan. Joe, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael, of all the things I have to be thankful for on Thanksgiving, your show is in the top few.
Thank you. God bless you for saying that. It makes my day.
Yeah, I'll be sending you my blessings as I'm enjoying my feast tomorrow. But I was curious if you're doing any special meal for Teddy.
God, I knew. All right, let me explain. This morning, as I was brining the turkey, getting ready to cook it tomorrow, I pulled out the giblets, right? And I separated them out, cleaned them, blah, blah, blah. But I threw them all into a pot, a soup pot. And I decided I would make them for the dogs today. In other words, I'd boil them in a low boil. Cool them off and give them in their regular meal some of the chicken heart, the turkey heart, the turkey this, the turkey that. I got to admit something to you, Joe, if I may. I ate most of it myself before I gave it to the dog. Those are my favorite parts of the bird.
Hey, I got a 22-pound cat, and I give him the same thing.
I just love, there's a certain part of the giblets. I don't know what part. I think it's the cloaca. I'm not sure what it is. It's... Without getting specific, it is so delicious. The little dog that I have, I have one who's like a movie star dog, like a circus animal Teddy. then he has, you know how some thoroughbred horses have a goat in the stall to entertain it, to keep it calm? Teddy has a 2-pound French. He's like, it took her 2 years to learn how to even mimic him. She'd say, you know, she's a 2-pound poodle, but very slow. But you come to love her just as much as the others somewhat. I even gave her a little bit of it, too. She got the turkey heart. Teddy got the turkey something else. Look what I'm talking about, a Ph.D., 50 years of education, 25 books on how to cook a turkey. You know what? So what? So what? It's a big part of life. I mean, look, what? Big deal. We could have gone to a restaurant. What does it mean? What does another restaurant meal mean? That's the whole point. I evaluated already with the family. I said, why? What are we going to do? I mean, there have been years we've gone to a hotel and enjoyed it very much. There are years we've gone to a restaurant and enjoyed it. But I grew up in a home where my mother, God rest her soul, loved to cook, and she had family over on these holidays. 20 people in a small, narrow, 20-foot house that you could hardly move around the dining table without emasculating yourself. You'd have to bend over backwards to avoid, you know, eviscerating your innards. And there was food everywhere you turned in the little entranceway. There were everywhere, chopped this and that, pickled that. So I enjoy the doing the same, even though it's a small family. And sure, it's no big deal on the one hand. On the other hand, when the house is emanating the odor of cooking, it's a different house. You know, do I have to make the obvious point? How many beautiful homes are there in America with $3 million kitchens? The stove has never been turned on. Can you explain that to me? They have the most expensive stove, a Wolf Range, that if you put a hippopotamus's leg in there, it would cook it within 30 minutes in a perfect manner at 12,000 degrees, never turned on. Either they get takeout or they go out, or they're not even in the house. It's one of the trophy homes. That's fine. Okay. I even had a strange, you want to hear something funny? My oven consistently takes too long, longer than it should to cook things. I've always known it was not calibrated properly. I've had it for 10 years, right? I forget the brand, one of the major American, like a Whirlpool in the... And, you know, we called a guy, and he came out yesterday, and he recalibrated it. I was right. It was off by 20 degrees. I always had to turn it up because it would never cook in time. And you can't believe how a 20-degree difference will change your cooking time. It's amazing to me. Now I'm really getting into this. Now you want to get into, what are you going to serve with your turkey? Now here comes the real fun part. Mrs. S. has always made homemade cranberry sauce when the children were young. It takes forever. You have to buy real cranberries. You have to boil the cranberries. And instead of adding sugar, we added honey. Then you add this, then you add that, then it comes out amazing. And it's not sugary where you can puke from it. We don't buy the gelled cranberry. Remember that? Remember the scare 20 years ago? Cancer from cranberries? That crackpot? You would have had to eat the entire state of Maine's cranberry supply to get possibly increase your risk of cancer by 25%. And so therefore we have the cranberry, then the stuffing has to be made right, then the side dishes. What are you doing for side dish? Okay, what am I doing? There's nothing better than a baked sweet potato, nothing in the whole world. Nutritious, the dogs love them. They're full of vitamin A, beta carotene, much better than a regular spud. I mean, I love regular potatoes, but the sweet potato is a different universe. Look at the Fijians, the years I lived in the islands, what they lived on. Sweet potatoes, yams, all of these root crops. Men who eat root crops are like iron. Did you know that little secret? You know, I once wrote a book, many books on nutrition years ago, but I did an analysis of societies and the types of food they ate. This has never been studied properly. But men who are made of iron in more traditional cultures generally eat a high amount of root crops in their diet, whether it's, as I said to you, the yams or the, what's the other one, the Fijians and all the South Pacific Islanders eat. I can't even remember right now. Taro root. I love taro root. It's very hard to cook because you have to cook the oxalic crystals out of it by, first you boil it, then you throw the water away, then you boil it again and throw the water away. It's forever. But they learned to do that over the years. But taro root, the men are made of sheer muscle. And taro is the staple of the food staple. But if you want to toughen your body, you shift over to root crops to a certain extent. You're going to find your strength increasing. There's a number of reasons for it if you want to get into some boring details. Think about it. A root crop grows under the soil, right? What is that root crop exposed to? It's exposed to all sorts of microbes under the soil. Could you live under the soil? Of course not. Of course, that's where you're going, but you can't live under there. That's why they put you there when you're dead. But the point is, in order to protect itself against the microbes, the root crop is filled with natural antifungal agents. And so therefore, since we're living in an age of paranoia about microbial illness and microbes and this and that, especially fungal illnesses, everyone's afraid of fungal illnesses, airborne fungal particles, you talk about black mold in houses. It could be that you would want to augment your diet with more root crops on a regular basis. So that's another thing. So what I do, to make a long story short, is make, in the lower oven, a baking pan with sweet potatoes. The seasonable hard vegetables of this time, I forget, the squash, the other little pumpkin-like things that the Indians, and you throw in and blah, 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 you put some olive oil on it, and it's unbelievable. I also throw in some whole garlic, the entire garlic clove, not a clove, the head. By the way, if you're into garlic, I mean, there's no reason you can't stuff the bird's cavity with oranges and or garlic or just garlic. What is the flavor you like? That's the flavor you should put inside the cavity of the bird. And as it cooks, it'll suffuse through the flesh. That's all. So it's not that complicated. Covering. Now, the question of whether to cover the turkey while you're cooking it comes up. And there's various theories on it. You cover the top with a little piece of aluminum foil. You put a wet the cloth on with the oil. There's all sorts of different tricks that people use. I have what you call one of those large, how do you describe them? They're a cooking thing. I don't even know what you call them. I bought it years ago because I grew up with one of those things. It's like, looks like a flower pot with a top on it. What would you call that, Beowulf? Like a loom, like a, you know, whatever. You put the animal in it and you cover the whole top and you cook it inside this closed pot. The thing basically comes out like a dream in the upper oven and the lower oven. And make sure you drink a lot. You know, the thing to do that you have to know about cooking is one of the main reasons to cook is you get to drink a lot more. And by the time you're halfway through it, you don't know what you're doing. And by the time you're finished, everything tastes good. So that's the key to cooking at home. That's the second reason. I'm going to drink. What am I going to drink with the bird? That's another thing. Whatever you like is the answer. There's no book on this. Someone's asking me what wine here. Chicago, Sean, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thank you for taking my call. I do understand that with wines it is what you like, but I just wanted to get your opinion on, I mean, would it be
a... All right. The truth is that turkey is a uniquely flavored bird, and I can get into the chemistry of it. It's, the flesh of turkey is especially rich in tryptophan, which is a sleep-inducing amino acid. People don't know that that's why they get especially drowsy after a turkey meal. They say it's just from eating too much. They don't realize it has to do a lot with the tryptophan, which is a sedative, a natural sedative. I want you to know that going in. Turkey's a very, very sedating meat. People don't know this. I don't think anyone's ever heard this before. I said it once 10 years ago. But let's get down to brass tacks. If you drink red wine in general, I think red wine overpowers turkey in flavor and in density. I would definitely suggest a light white wine. I'm going to drink New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, particularly Marlborough from Marlborough, New Zealand. It's my current favorite right now. It's very hard to find. I'm not even going to tell you where because you can't get it anywhere. But I like New Zealand Sauvignon Blancs. They're a little on the fruity side, but I think they're perfect with turkey. Or any Sauvignon Blanc from Napa Valley, Sonoma, you know, any California Sauvignon Blanc. Not to diminish what we make out here in California, but many of the wines are very, very good. I happen to like the New Zealand flavors more because they're a little more lemony. I like the lemony flavor, okay? Tucson, Arizona. Larry, you're up on the Savage Nation. What's up?
Hey, nice to talk to you. I hope to meet you someday. I've always listened to you either on AM or FM whenever I get the chance.
Thank you.
I want to talk to you about cooking a turkey upside down, but with the breast down first.
Why? Why do you do that?
What's the first thing that cooks on a turkey when you put it in the oven?
I don't know. What's the first thing that cooks on a... The breast usually cooks.
It's the top where all the heat is exposed to the breast. So the breast comes out drier than you might want it to be.
Right. Well, that no. But I cook it in a closed cooking container in the oven. You know, where the juices continue, the steam rotates around in it, and the flavor stays in it. I don't know the name of the item I'm talking about. It's basically a small Dutch oven that I put it in inside the oven. You know what I mean?
My grandmother used to, in Michigan, God bless her soul, used to cook one in a big electric oven. and that would have a closed top. And she did all hers in a closed oven. Like
I see. Well, no, my oven, of course, yeah, I believe is an electric oven. But I put the animal inside a container in the oven, so it preserves the juices, so to speak. Now, we could do politics, if you wish. What are you thankful for this year? I got to tell you something. You know, there's a lot to be said for saying thanks. There's something about it. It humbles you, and it reminds you how bad things could be. If you don't remember what to be thankful for, what do you want? I don't know how you could ever have a minute's peace if you can't be thankful for anything. I mean, so many of us are so wealthy, even in these times, and many of us don't even know how to say thank you. You say, well, who do you say thanks to? Well, if you're an atheist, I don't know. I can't answer your question. If you're a Democrat, you can thank Obama, because the reason you have a lot to be thankful for is because he robbed us taxpayers to put money in your pocket. I can understand how you'd thank. You'd thank Obama the saint. But if you're a normal person, you know, you have to thank God. What do you think the blessing at a table is for, whether it be the original Jewish blessing or the Christian blessing? Why do they thank God? Because it reminds you where it comes from. Think of the prayer over bread. The Jewish prayer over bread is very interesting, where you say, thank you, God, for giving us the wheat of the land that we may have this bread. Now, it brings you all the way back to the basics. Why? Because there were times that there was no wheat in the land. There are people on earth who do not have wheat in their land. They have drought in their land, and they are eating insects. So if you remember all these things, and you remember how the humble grass known as wheat has provided you with the basis for the staples that you have on the table, it reduces all of the craziness in your life to something that you can be thankful for, even a morsel of bread. Because if you think back in your ancestry, I don't care what your ethnic background is, you don't have to go back too many generations to realize that there was somebody in your past, and I don't mean a million years ago, who probably was near starvation most of their life. I know it's hard for you to realize this as an American. It's almost crazy to think about that. But if you can personalize it in that manner, then even the most humble piece of bread becomes significant. Now you say, well, am I making it up? No, I am not, because I actually try to do it every time I have a bite. I kind of remember what it must be like for people who are starving somewhere on earth, and or what it was like for one of my ancestors to be living on either meager rations or starving to death altogether. Okay, so we'll be right back.
Savage.
There are 50 ways to do a turkey, okay? Just as I told you, there's 50 varieties of socialism. So there's 50 ways to do it. You can hardly fail with it. The main element I wanted to get across today on the show is that most people do know how to cook a turkey, and they do it their own way, and it comes out fine. But I'm trying to avoid food contamination, because most of you don't know how to brine the turkey in a simple manner prior to cooking it, and that's what I try to explain to you. I took it out of my package this morning. I brined it this morning and dried it and put it back in the refrigerator for cooking tomorrow. Now, notice I didn't say I defrosted it. It was fresh. So you don't want to defrost and then refrigerate. Don't get me wrong. All I'm saying is you brine it. You soak the thing with salt. Kosher salt is preferred, inside, outside. Let the salt sit on the bird for 2 minutes, a minute or two. That's all you need. Let the salt literally touch the skin and touch the cavity. Then use the cold water spray with the, if you got the shower top on it, the little thing that makes it like a shower, get everywhere, blah, 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 in and out. Dry it. Put some oranges into the cavity if you're going to wait until tomorrow. You want to salt it a little bit, tiny bit if you want. You can. Put it back into the refrigerator and you're ready to go. And tomorrow is the easiest time, is tomorrow. You set the oven low, 3 1/4. You put the turkey inside the oven. Again, you can put butter on the breast. You can put non-virgin olive oil on the breast. Don't use the virgin oil because it'll burn. You can put a little Smart Balance type substance if you want. And you roast it, if it's a 12 to 14 pounder, for 3 hours. There's nothing to it. Get a meat thermometer today. Put it into the thickest part of the thigh. When it registers 175 to 180, there you go. Just pull it out and let it sit for a while before you start cutting it, okay? Most people will tell you don't cover a roasting turkey. Why? You want the skin to be crisp and brown. Every child likes the skin more than anything else. Yes. And on the other hand, you don't want it to brown too quickly because it'll burn. And if that starts to happen, if you see it going on, cover the brown parts loosely with aluminum foil. Try to cover the bird as little as possible so you don't create steam. You don't want to steam it. That's a different thing, okay? There's many different ways to do it. And ethnic groups that are celebrating the American holiday, if they're Asian, they usually use soy sauce on the bird. You see, so whatever your ethnic background is, you're going to change it according to your taste and your needs. There's no firm way to do this. This is an invented American holiday like all holidays. That's all it is. All holidays are creations of mankind. And in the sense that they are, mankind adjusts the holidays according to his needs. So there it is. There's nothing more to it. We could do politics in the next hour, old rock and roll. I could tell you about Dr. Pharmacist and his short foot. I can read your children's stories. New York, welcome to the Savage Nation. Hem is your name, Hemo?
Hemo.
Yes, Hemo. What's on your mind?
Hi, Dr. Savage. It's a pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you, ma'am.
I want to let you know that my daughter, who is 14 years old, and my husband are dedicated listeners to you.
Thank you. And how do you cook your turkey in 20 seconds or less?
I just boil water with ginger and soy sauce.
That's fine. It gives it the flavor that you like. That's what I'm saying. It's a very subjective thing. Now, I hope your daughter eats anything. Is not one of those children who says, I don't eat anything with a face. She eats the turkey? The answer to that is eat the steak, idiot. It has no face on it.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
How touchy things get this time of year. Some folks demand to hear and see the phrase Merry Christmas. Some businesses and people like the more inclusive phrase Happy Holidays. But Best Buy raised some eyebrows on Sunday in its circular when it wished customers a happy Eid al-Adha, a Muslim holiday.
Now, why would Best Buy wish shoppers a happy Eid or whatever, a Muslim holiday, but refuse to say Merry Christmas? Do you think that this is political insanity gone too far? Of course it is. And that's why the group CARE, who tried to run me off the air in clip 11, applauds the introduction of Sharia, in essence, to America through the cowards in the corporate media. Listen to clip 11.
The Council on American-Islamic Relations applauds the recognition of the Muslim holiday, saying it's a good step in the right direction, making Muslims feel more included in the American society.
Well, I'll let that sit by itself. So America now, maybe we'll hear that George Washington was really a Muslim and Abe Lincoln was a Muslim. I mean, that's coming next. Look, this is getting crazy, and for the corporations to be bending over backwards to appease ethnic groups like this is a double slap in the face when they won't play any Christmas songs. You know that, which is why I chose to do turkey recipes for the last hour in the Savage Nation. We can do anything you want, truthfully. It's your show as much as it is anything else. There are many, many other topics on the air. And many, many other topics. I mean, we have Obama, who is the King Ludwig II of our time. Look him up. I guarantee you the Google search for King Ludwig is going to go through the roof since I started mentioning it. When I was younger, I became fascinated by various figures. And one of the earliest, not one of the early, when I was 18, 19, I was writing essays for magazines. One of the characters I became infatuated with as a topic or interested in was King Ludwig II of Bavaria. He was a very young, immature, inexperienced prince who was made king of Bavaria, and he chose to aggrandize himself in the following way. He duplicated the Palace of Versailles at his castle in one of the lakes in Bavaria, including the Hall of Mirrors. He bankrupted the Bavarian treasury in his madness, and people have talked about it, the madness of King Ludwig. I believe that Obama is very much like King Ludwig in some ways. Certainly there's not a direct comparison, but there is a comparison. There is a comparison. That's why I'd rather talk about turkey recipes than anything else. So whatever you want to talk about, whatever topics have attracted your attention today, there are political, you know, the family, the political. I can tell you stories. I can talk about childhood stuff. But I've done this before. Maybe I'm tired of it. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. Number of troubled banks rises to 552. You want to talk about... Hey, let me ask you something. Isn't it all psychological? When Obama took office, we were told that we had a meltdown of the economic system worse than since the last Depression. Now, how is it that we're supposedly out of the recovery when the job creation has turned out to be fraudulent? The number of jobs created by the Obama people turn out to be invented the same way global warming data has been fudged by the leading proponents of global warming because they benefit the most by the grants, etc. Why should we believe that the economy is better? Why is the economy better? Based on what? Well, if it's better, if things are moving again, God bless whoever did it, then it's just based on psychology. So, in other words, they freaked you out by saying the economy is the worst since the Depression, give us extraordinary powers, and we'll fix it. And what they did was is they robbed $1 trillion and dispersed some of it only to their friends. None of it is trickled down. What we have is trickle-up poverty, a phrase I coined during the campaign. It is trickle-up poverty. What they're doing is they're making more people at the top poorer, in plain English. 1-800-449-8255. New York City, Georgia, on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I wanted to... What I'm thankful this year is for what I've got with my family, my wife, getting it, you know.
All right, thanks for the call. And that's sort of something you should do privately at a table. You know, all right, look, it's radio. You expect anything happens. What about Afghanistan? What about the poor guys sitting out there slugging it out with the Islamo-fascists? What about them? What kind of Thanksgiving are they having? I saw a show on the reconstruction of the faces of soldiers who came back from Iraq and Afghanistan with their faces blown off. I couldn't believe what I was watching. 32 operations to give the man back a semblance of a face. For what? For what? So a group of fat slobs wearing dirty nightshirts can run around screaming death to America in Iraq and not pay us back a dime? What'd they get maimed for, I ask myself? For what? They liberated 24 million Shia from the thumb of the Sunni Muslims, and what happened? Who was the beneficiary? Tell me who was the beneficiary. Iran was the beneficiary. You now have a greater Persia. The greatest dream in the world was George Bush's mistake, his blunder in Iraq, was creating a large Shia empire along the lines of ancient Persia when there was no Iraq. Oh, God. Dollar hits 15-month low. 15-month low. Well, I thought it went up yesterday. I read that it was a safe haven all of a sudden. That went down again. Gold rises to record on falling dollar. Dollar hits low on a rising dollar. Well, who knows? I got my money in T-bills. The few dollars I have is in T-bills. And yes, I did give away. I gave a gift yesterday. I do give things at Thanksgiving. You feel better giving. You got to give something to somebody, don't you? I made some donations this morning. I threw an uncooked pizza into the bay for the seagulls. You say that's silly. That's being comedic in the political arena. I don't know. There's something about feeding wild animals. It was a pizza. I bought one of the pre-made a goat cheese pizza that I like once in a while. And I didn't. The date was out on it. All right, so they killed me. That I called PETA. I gave it one of the 2 day out on the date. I wasn't going to eat it over the next weekend. So I unwrapped it, and I threw it in the bay. You should see the birds. There were no birds around. I knew they'd swoop down within, I counted, around 30 seconds. They have some eyes on them, the birds. I don't know what they eat. Wow. They come swooping in. The guy looked at it, and he did a dive at it. He lucked out because he thought it was a plain piece of dough But it had cheese on it because, you know, the pizza. And he got his protein. He got his carbs. He had some vegetables. That, boy, that seagull lucked out today. But here we are sitting in America watching the world go around. And we ask ourselves, how does this man get away with it? How? How does a man who is so obviously insecure and so obviously frightened of the job. Why do I say he's frightened of the job? The man is now surrounding himself with his wife and Oprah Winfrey. He's running to cover behind mommy because he knows that people don't like him anymore because his ratings are sliding. So now psychologically, I'm doing Obama on the couch because we do this for every president. We, the American people, have the right to do it. And we're not. I'm not trying to do it in an undignified fashion, but the man has problems. And one of them is insecurity. And this is not good for us because he wants to please everyone except the American patriot. He wants to please every dictator on earth. He wants to please fraudulent scientists and cope with climate change. Yeah, good, you did the right thing. When it just came out that it was all fraudulent, the data was all cooked. 1-800, who do you, I don't want to go into the Thanksgiving thing. I mean, you're going to make your prayer over the Thanksgiving, even if you don't pray. You're going to see how it changes your view of the world. You know, you try that. You want to make people uncomfortable at Thanksgiving? Especially if you live in one of the porn belts of America, not the corn belts, but the porn belts. You have a group over and you say, before we begin dinner, they think that, you know, you could do the glass tapping. They think you're going to make a boring speech about your daughter-in-law. No. Say, I'd like to do something different tonight. I'd like to thank God for all that we have at this table. Watch what happens at the table if they're not religious. Just watch what happens. They get embarrassed. They don't know. What is she, crazy? What, she fine, Laura? Are she nuts? You want to make them nuts? Say, I'd like to thank God for everything we have today. Can we all please join God in saying thank you for all that we have for the bounty on the table? Watch and see. You're going to see something happen at that table. You're going to see that those who go along with you are generally conservative, and those who get the most offended are usually the atheistic, anti-American liberal. So you see, you can see the whole world even through a turkey, incidentally. I want to hear a little music. I want to hear some music. Let me think about something. What music you want? Give me some 50s rock and roll, guys.
Out of all the reindeers, you know you're the mastermind.
That's 50s rock and roll.
Run, run, Rudolph.
Run, oh, run, run, Rudolph. Far
behind.
Run, run, Brazil, no one wants to see me.
Santa make
this keeps up, I'm going to head to Rio and never be heard from again. You ever have a fantasy of running away from it all and never being heard from again? Have you ever had that fantasy? As a child, everyone thinks of joining the circus. I'm not thinking of joining the circus. I'm telling you, I'm in the circus. This is the circus. The media is the American circus. Make no mistake about it. Anyone in the media is in the American circus. It doesn't matter who they are, me, you, or the other guy. It doesn't matter. But when you have a guy at such a level of incompetence in the White House, surrounded by fraud artists like this, it makes you just throw up your hands and say there's no point in talking about it because there's no opposition party. There's no opposition party. At least if you have a two-party system, you have some outcry, you have some capacity to argue with them. But how do you explain that emails are hacked, it's discovered definitively that all of the most hysterical proponents of global warming were faking the data and ridding anyone, driving anyone out of the scientific establishment who ridiculed them, or rather who even challenged them, and the major media will not even report these hacked emails. And then you have a president who is about to go from genuflecting in Asia to going to Copenhagen, where he'll be slapped on the back and said, good man, you're great. Yeah, great. We're going to lower the carbon by 17%. Great. Well, okay, that'll wreck the economy for the next century. This is the greatest scandal in modern science. It's being called ClimateGate. And we have a president who is going to the UN climate meeting filled with the biggest fraud artists on the planet. I'll be right back.
Savage.
If the talk at Turkey Day turns to global warming and the fantasy thereof, you've got to understand what has happened this week. There has been a revelation that has been all over the blogosphere on Monday night. And the corporations that run the media are behind the blogosphere, meaning way behind them. I don't mean behind the blogosphere. They're not up to the blogosphere's investigative powers. And what they're trying to do is cover up the skepticism about global warming by repeating the big lie over and over again. And I got to remind you of something, that the best article, well, there's so many best articles written about this. You can choose from amongst many. But one of them I've linked up on michaelsavage.com from England, Gerald Warner, about this climate change fraud. And I want to read you one paragraph. He writes, "Man-made global warming is not science, but a religious cult. It is the 21st century's equivalent of the Fifth Monarchy Man and the Countess of Huntington's connection. Only a massive collaboration between governments anxious to extend state power, scientists with their mouths clamped to the IPC, and entrepreneurs eager to make billions has enabled a superstition to be imposed on the world that will wreck developed nations' economies, impoverish developing countries, and kill their populations and rape the landscape of Europe. The majority of people now reject this nonsense. Media organizations like the BBC have betrayed truth and objectivity on this, as so many other issues, so should not be surprised if the public abandons them for open debate online." And that's what's going on. We understand that the clowns behind this have had their cover blown. We understand that they have been found out. They have the nerve now to say that in their emails when they said trick the data, that they really didn't mean that they were tricking the data, that it's a scientific name for a mathematical process. Can you believe this? Can you believe that these fraudulent scientists are saying that when they said in their emails we're going to trick people with the data, they were just referring to a mathematical implementation, something called a trick? That's rubbish. They should be arrested. All of their assets should be seized. They should pay back every dime that they have collected from the public on this massive fraud. And Al Gore should be arrested. He should be indicted. He should be tried for fraud. If we lived in just times and we had a just government, not only would there be public hearings on the fraud of global warming, where let both sides be heard. Let the 1,500 legitimate scientists who debate, who are skeptical of this lie, have their say as well. Don't say that the science is in. As I told you yesterday, there's not a fact on earth where the science is not still debated. Virtually all of science is open to debate. That's right. Virtually all of science is open to debate, except when it comes to the myth of global warming. And the fanatics in this, the religious fanatics in this sphere, are so adamant in saying the science is in and no one disagrees except those paid by the oil companies. It's utter rubbish. It's those paid for by corporations that are going to benefit by this. Those receiving giant grants to prove this myth, they're the ones who should be challenged. So read the data for yourself. Read the emails and just wring your hands and say, how in the world could people be tricked by this? How in the world can people go on and on and on? Is there no self-preservation instinct in Western man anymore? Is there no instinct for self-preservation left in Western man anymore? It's all a crock. It is all a crock, and it's a bunch of complete and total gangsters in this global warming corporate world. And make no mistake about it, the blogosphere is alive and well with the data on this. I can cite 10, 20, 30, 40 peer-reviewed articles that say there is no global man-induced global warming. 30, 40, 50 or more. I can show you them if you want them, if you really want to see them. But don't tell me that there are no peer-reviewed articles like that crackpot who went on Fox News. Don't tell me that. There are at least 50 to 150 such articles.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. We've primarily been talking about how to cook a turkey as Obama cooks the nation. We're talking about how to cook a turkey on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. San Diego, California. We have a caller named Jose. Welcome to the program. Jose, what's on your mind?
The two comments I have to make, Mr. Savage, is you would think that the climatologists that were so concerned about Mother Earth having a fever, that they would be quite happy now to find out that all the information was false.
Yes, in other words, if I hear what you're saying, in other words, if their real concern was with the health of Mother Earth, they should celebrate by saying we found that the doctor was a crank, a crackpot, and that his thermometer was broken. We can rest easy now. But instead, they're digging their heels in and saying, even though you're saying his thermometer was rigged and he's a crank who was in it for the money, we don't care. We want to believe that Mother Earth has a fever because we're committed to it.
That's correct. That's correct.
No, it's a very interesting way of looking at things, Jose. And it shows you that they're fraudulent scientists, because a real scientist would say, all right, maybe they're right. Maybe the skeptics have something there. Let's open it up to debate. Let's get the climatologists, the others who know something about this, in an open debate. Let's debate for a year around the world in forums and all of the nations committed to this before we rush to judgment. Wouldn't that be reasonable, Jose?
Being a concerned parent, if I was concerned about the well-being of my children, then whatever the diagnosis is, if it came out positive that my child is actually healthy, I would certainly be in celebration of that. So the same enviro wackos that are out there that were concerned about our Earth, they should be jumping for joy and doing backflips.
You know, it reminds me of the syndrome called Munchausen by proxy syndrome, where generally a mother, could be a father. Munchausen by proxy syndrome is where a mother makes a child sick in order to have this sick child dependent upon her for a long period of time. I would say that this Munchausen by proxy syndrome applies to the global warming gangsters. The global warming hysterics have, in essence, created a Munchausen by proxy warming scenario in order to have a sick globe that they could profit from.
Unreal.
Jose, listen, stay on the line because you've helped me with a new phrase. I'm sending you a free copy of my wonderful book, Banned in Britain, which will probably be sold out by Sunday. I really don't know what happens if people buy books. I forgot it from the past, but I want you to have one of the rare first edition, first printing copies of Banned in Britain by Michael Savage. Stay on the line. Free copy going out to you. I'm going to go out on my boat, I think, this after the turkey. I'd like to take the turkey to the boat and eat it on the boat, but we're not going to do that. Could do it on the boat. I have it's a mess, but I have it's a dual oven on this boat. It has a microwave and it has I made an interesting thing on it the other day. I was out on it last 2 weeks ago. I made Texas toast. I never heard of such a thing. It's a wonderful microwave oven that's also another kind of, I forget the name of it. What do you call the other ovens that you need? I don't know, whatever. Inversion oven or something like that, whatever. And I didn't have a toaster on the boat, and I like a toasted bagel on the boat for some reason. And I found a recipe. It's a Texas toast. I never heard of such a thing. Then the things are so good. It says remove, put in a ceramic tray. I did what it said, the computer. I put the bagel in, and presto, and what got through it came out of the toast. It was perfect. The dogs love toast. Of course, it gets all over everything. Anyway, I went to the boat this morning. I had new canvas made, and the woman put it on. She surprised me without calling. On the windshield, I had new white canvas put on. It looks like a new, like a bib on the... You don't believe how nice canvas looks on a boat, new white canvas. Going to go out to sea tomorrow. Hey, play some Billy Bones for me. That's what I'm in the mood for. Some of that maudlin Billy Bones, seafaring music. You guys can dig that up for me? Where they bury him? I like the one with the burial shroud. March me along, march me along, ho, 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 march me along. That's like ho, ho, ho in a bottle of rum kind of stuff. 1-800-449-8255. New York City, WR. Jerry, welcome to the program. I can't believe what you're about to say. I see it on the board. Go ahead.
No, I'm saying you're completely wrong about Obama and Ludwig, because Ludwig left such beauty behind. People are going there. They're online to see his castles. What's Obama?
No, you got me there. At least Ludwig did something with his madness.
That's right. Look at the beauty. I mean, look at those castles. People go from all over the world to see them.
Have you seen his Schloss on the lake?
Yes. Yes.
You have. You've been in the duplicate, the Hall of Mirrors?
It's just a study, because my father was stationed in Germany.
Jerry, I tell you the truth. I was obsessed with King Ludwig when I was young and wrote an article for him for Esquire, and they rejected it. I still have the article somewhere, but I saw pictures of the castle he built. I could not believe this. But he bankrupted Bavaria and because he was another narcissist in love with himself. Jerry, thanks for that call from New York City. That's good. See, my callers are good. When they're good, they're good. When they're good, they're good. Portland, Oregon. Max, you're up in the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Galileo had the same sort of problem that we have today with global warming. The prevailing idea back then about the solar system was that it was geocentric, that everything centered around the Earth and the solar system. Mm. Today we have an idea that man is the cause of everything. And both ideas...
You know, wait, it's very interesting how these retrograde prehistoric minds like Gores and the fraudsters in the global warming hysterical field are very much like the flat earthers, or more specifically to the school of thought that you're reflecting, that the universe spins around the Earth.
That's right. And Galileo could prove that it was heliocentric. He could prove it.
He could prove it. And what did they do to Galileo when he upset the apple cart of established knowledge?
If they executed him or if he took the hemlock. It was one of the two.
No, Galileo was not given hemlock. That was the ancient Greek. I believe he was locked up in a tower. Galileo was excommunicated and put in a tower for being in essence a heretic. So look, I'm an outsider, Max, and I've always been a skeptic in any endeavor I've gone into, because I think skepticism is very healthy. Truthfully, I'm a skeptic on many issues, and I'm a political skeptic when you think about it. It's why I'm an outsider, not permitted on television, because I'm skeptical of both sides, and therefore I'm the most dangerous kind of mind that they could possibly have. I'm skeptical of the newscasters themselves. But Galileo is a very apt description. Very, very true. Yep, one of my listeners said it's a convection oven. Thank you, Miss L.M. Thank you. It is a convection oven. This woman listens to me in New York. I have my listeners. They bailed me out. Convection oven. A convection oven. It's amazing how it makes Texas toast. I even like making Texas toast on a boat. My favorite sandwich on a boat when it's cold in the San Francisco Bay, let's say I go out on a sunny day and it's cold. I don't eat it much anymore because I'm off dairy. I have been for 6 months and all of my minor arthritic pains went away. I got to tell you right now, greatest, amazing, amazing, amazing. You can't believe it. Last December I was in Cancun. I could hardly walk. I have pictures of me on a beach. My son was holding me up like an old guy. I swear to God, I was limping. My right arch was killing me, and I thought it was old age. It isn't. I'm not that old. I kicked dairy, got off dairy. See, I had forgotten my own writings of 30 years ago. I gave up dairy because, first of all, I've always had a lactase deficiency. I've always been allergic to lactose-based products. And within a few weeks, all of my minor arthritic pains went away. My left hand would lock up like a claw. Would you believe it? I could eat one piece of cheese and my hand reacts immediately and my foot is achy in the morning. It's amazing to me. I'm not saying it's for you. It's just I am not made for dairy. And it's better, too. I've lost a bit of weight as a result. Yep, it is true. Who did I tell us this? I can't do this on the air. I start thinking about my body. I can't do that because then it starts to remind me of... Play Billy Bones for a minute, the body. Bones, Billy Bones, B. Jones, everybody.
Golden wench's bone, you had your last fill, Billy Bones.
Hey, Wolf, who's the group? Skip Henderson.
Good morning to you, Billy Bones.
Billy Bones, Billy Bones. Good morning to you, Billy. Father Billy.
The chest that you're laying on, I've sailed the sea for you, and I and Flint did agree to divvy the contents up into three golden jewels. Billy Bones, Billy Bones,
Bones, Bones, Bones, Bones, Bones, Billy Bones,
send him off to Davy Jones,
D. Jones.
Rum and gold and wench's bold.
Rum and gold and wench's bold. I like that line. of rum and gold in Wench's Bowl. I guess they were the Hell's Angels with propellers of their time. Oh, Lord, help us all. Help us all. 1-800-5- did, so we did turkey recipes. We roasted the president a little bit. We roasted the fraudulent scientists. Al Gore is nowhere to be found with the discovery of the emails. Notice Al Gore is no longer being gig. You can't find him. He's not giving speeches anymore. How does he get away with this? Missouri, Stephanie, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael. Could you tell me what the traditional dishes are on tomorrow's Savage menu?
Oh, the standard. I do the turkey. I do a sweet potato. The stuffing, the regular cranberry sauce made from real cranberries and some honey and lemon rather than in the can. And then, of course, a roast tray of the sweet potatoes and squash and some of the other vegetables of the season. That's about it.
The pies.
I'm sorry?
What about the pies? Do you have homemade?
No, I'm not a sugar eater, Stephanie. I have not had dessert in many, many decades. It's one of the things I deny myself because I don't handle sweets well. I never eat sugary foods, never. It's one of the things I've avoided for 30 years. I grew up, I had migraine headaches as a kid. I don't want to go into it. I'll start to sound like a complainer. And I wound up when I was 18 reading a lot of books. And the first health book I ever read was called Zen Macrobiotics by George Osawa. Would you believe it? And it was the first time I read a theory on diet that showed diet could be related to illness. I had no idea that food had anything to do with health. Because truthfully, in the culture that I was raised, no food was seen as potentially causing any illness. Consequently, all the men died under the age of 50. They were given the cardiotoxic diets from you know, I've done this before. It's not funny. It's pathetic. The ignorance is beyond belief. When you think about it. I told you, the savage childhood diet, if you were an evil scientist, let's say of the type that frauded up global warming, and you wanted to study coronary heart disease, meaning atherosclerosis, and you wanted to see how rapidly you can occlude arteries, you would have raised them on the savage childhood diet, which usually consisted of a very, very fatty, sugary breakfast, some kind of meat and eggs in the morning with a jelly donut on the way to school, to cause and induce a hypoglycemic attack within 30 minutes where I'd fall asleep in the chair, packed in clothing that I could hardly move in the winters, coupled with that diet. Then for lunch, something light, usually leftover meat from the night before. My mother gave me a sandwich, a meatloaf, something on the light side, a meatloaf sandwich. Then at night, another light dinner, usually steak and French fries, followed up by cherry vanilla ice cream. I'm not making this up. I mean, my mother, God bless her, thought she was doing something good for her son, because they came from deprivation in the old country where food was scarce, I suppose. So they thought that the more food was better. And the very famous picture, which I've described on the show over the years, I'm sure will be reenacted across America tomorrow. And that is of the relatives, all of the male relatives sitting on the couch, holding their stomachs after the meal, going, oh, oh, oh. Now, in those days, of course, they were allowed to open up their belt and let their stomach out. Today, the kids would call the police. So I don't think they even open the... I don't even think the men are allowed to open their... You see, there is a wisdom to the dirty nightshirt in the Middle East, because you don't have a belt constraining the stomach. There's nothing to open. In other words, you eat and you expand and you then it's... Whatever. The nightshirt is good. There's no reference to what you've just eaten. 1-800-449-8255. But that is why I was kind of the headaches and this, and then I read this in Zen Macrobiotics, and I started to experiment with salt and no salt and sugar and no sugar. I did it myself when I was 18 years old, and my migraines disappeared. They went away. I had killer migraines. I had to go into dark rooms. I had to lock myself in a dark room with no noise. They were so bad, it was beyond belief. There were no drugs on earth that could stop the headaches. I don't even want to think about it. But I found out in my case, when I gave up sucrose, any sugars, no, not any sugars, sucrose in particular, my migraines went away. Okay? And now I'm telling you, there are many. Do I have to tell you what you already know? So in the early 70s, I started to write books on health and herbal medicine and nutrition. I was a skeptic. In fact, it's funny. Here I am, a skeptic about Democrats, a skeptic about Republicans, a skeptic about the system, a skeptic about the fraudulent global warming artists. In 1983, I published a book, Macmillan published it, called The Skeptical Nutritionist. It's actually a miniature classic. It's worth reading today. Maybe some of the information is still useful. But the book was entitled The Skeptical Nutritionist. Now, that was 1983. Where did I get the title from? I got the title from a 17th or 18th century scientist who wrote a book called The Skeptical Chemist. The Skeptical Chemist, with a Y rather than an E. And so I was very skeptical about nutrition at the time, not on both sides of the aisle, by the way. I was and still remain skeptical of the AMA, ADA viewpoint, and I am equally skeptical of some of the claims of the vitamin hucksters. And so, therefore, I was not popular with either group. And it's the same. It's a funny thing what it is when you're a skeptic, as I am a natural-born skeptic. It's funny, natural-born killer, natural-born skeptic. If you're a natural-born skeptic, you get ostracized by most elements of society. And you wind up in talk radio if you're lucky. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow.
It is the Savage Nation. Thanksgiving, Thanksgiving, Thanksgiving. Now, of course, I've given you some ideas on how to brine a turkey prior to cooking it. Very important advice. You can do it with any chicken. You must do it. You must do it, particularly in an age of food contamination, especially in an age when people are kind of, let's say, they don't know how to prepare food properly. And I'm not blaming anybody. Your mother's gone. There's no grandmothers around in the houses anymore to teach you any of these things. And most of us eat in restaurants too often. And these old, simple tricks are very important. That's why I spent time on pre-preparing the bird. And so I hope you've enjoyed that. As far as cooking a turkey, it's turkey soup, as they say. There's nothing to it. Just a few little tricks, and that's about it. And by the way, don't be afraid. Experiment. Each time could be different. You like garlic? Put garlic in the cavity. You like the smell of oranges? Put oranges in the cavity. You want to make the skin extra crisp? You could put orange juice on the skin toward the last hour of cooking. Thick orange juice, frozen orange juice, and don't dilute it too much. My mother used to do that. She'd do a modified a duck de la orange. She'd do it on a chicken. It works fine. Mom, how do you make the turkey breast so crisp? Because kids love turkey skin. And today the children are maniacs. They've been frightened by the same groups that have herded them into believing in global warming and the dying polar bears. They've been told to eat nothing with a face on it. So they're emaciated. They're lacking essential enzymes and other essential nutrients. They can't think. They're depressed. And instead of giving them medication, why don't you just give them a hamburger once in a while? Almost force feed them a piece of turkey. See if they don't feel better. Your daughter will feel better. She can kick the medicine she's on or give up the drugs if she'd eat meat for 3 days in a row. I know it's, oh, God, my daughter won't eat meat. She's too pure. She's too pure. Get back to me 3 o'clock in the morning. This is the thing. It's all a cover-up for a moral sin. The more morally deranged people are, the more purist they are about food, I've come to understand. Not in all cases, okay? It's not a generalization in that regard. But believe me, a lot of people who, oh, no, I don't touch meat. No, I don't eat turkey. I don't eat dairy. I don't touch meat. At night, they're sticking a needle in their arm. In the morning, they're lacto-ovo-vegetarians. They don't eat anything with a face.
Savage. Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Look at the headline today. ABC announces primetime Oprah Obama Christmas special. The guy knows he's in trouble. He knows he's been found out. He's hiding between two strong women. This is the weakness that we saw on his trips to Asia. Comes back and he hides in mommy's lap. Now you look down and you see Obama leaves White House clutching GQ magazine, featuring himself. Can you believe a president would carry around a magazine with a picture of himself like a little boy? I told you, Obama on the couch, we have a narcissist, a very insecure man. Let us pray, just let us pray that he's also good inside. That's all I can say. I pray to God that this man is good inside. You know what I mean? He doesn't cross the line. Look at MichaelSavage.com. Obama shatters spending record for first-year presidents. No kidding. Gold is going through the roof. Hindu sacrifice of 250,000 animals begins. 10 students suspended for taking part in Kick a Jew Day. How do you like that one?
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, did you hear that one?
It's like Kristallnacht all over again.
I'll tell you, Beowulf, Fort Hood suspect is going to use the insanity defense. By definition, any Islamo-fascist is insane, isn't he, by contemporary standards?
I mean, fascism. I mean, think about the word.
This Kick a Jew Day is in North Naples, I think. Is that in Florida? 10 North Naples middle school students were suspended last week after district officials said they participated in a Kick a Jew Day. District spokeswoman Joe Lannon said a student told a dean of students at the dismissal that she was kicked because it was Kick a Jew Day. Following morning, Principal Margaret Jackson addressed the entire student body, blah, 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 blah. As an adult district determined 10 students should be punished, blah, blah, blah.
I swear to God, when you first read the story, I thought it was in Naples, Italy.
No, so did I.
It was the return of Il Duce or something.
All right, well, that's the new America. Polanski wins bail. Did you hear about that one in Switzerland?
I saw that. You know, they're letting him go again. They made the same mistake that we made, you know, 30 years ago, giving him an opportunity to escape.
Well, he can go to a Swiss boarding school and teach or something. That would be a safe place for him, wouldn't it?
Yeah, they'd probably hire him, too.
Yeah, Swiss boarding school for 13-year-olds? Perfect. Knowing the European Union, that's what they'll probably give him as punishment. By the way, I have a holiday special on my website. I know on Black Friday they'll be gone, but anyone who buys a band in Britain at the regular price gets one copy of Psychological Nudity for just $5. That's below my cost, just for 1 week only. I mean, I want people to have a good holiday. So what else is on MichaelSavage.com? Iran's leader gets backing in friendly Bolivia. BBC waking up to climate hoax, we hope. House leader battles Britain's savage ban. Little chance for execution of cop killer in Philadelphia. U.S. and Iran is in a naval Red Sea buildup. Obama approval drops to a new low. Chinese-owned GM, it could happen. Drug smugglers are targeting the U.S. truck program. We warned everyone about that. Remember, don't do it. Indians want gambling way off the reservation. An Indian tribe wants to build a grand $1.5 billion Las Vegas-style casino resort on a swath of land overlooking San Francisco Bay, a spot more than 100 miles from its tribal lands. They claim that that was their original land.
It's the ultimate example of multiculturalism running amok.
Well, at least the word casino has a vowel in the end. You know, I mean, there's something real there. Has everyone ever noticed that? I mean, it's terrible for the, you know, the Italian-American Anti-Defamation League, but casino ends in an O. Navy SEALs face assault charges for capturing most wanted terrorist, Fox News. This is all on MichaelSavage.com. Goodbye jobs, hello mom and dad, say young adults, they're moving back home. Savage honored by profile in The New Yorker. Picky everything free eaters make hosting a nightmare. Boy, that's one we're going to have a lot of fun with today. Imagine having someone to your house. They're vegan, lacto, ovo, no gluten, lactose intolerant, no dairy, allergic to peanuts, no complex carbs, won't eat anything with a face, no shrimp. Child requires a pasta side dish with every meal, no dark meat. Can you imagine? I'd throw them out of the house.
It's amazing. You present a list of demands to someone who's offering you a free meal and inviting them into your home.
Well, my father once served a friend that was difficult a kennel ration burger because he got him so nuts. He said, oh, you only eat the restaurant? I tell you what, I'll make you an excellent burger. And he never cooked in a day in his life. He went and opened up a can of dog food, God rest his soul. And he made that burger, Beowulf, fried it away. Uh-huh. And his friend ate it, loved every bite of it. My father said, you enjoying it? Yes, terrific. probably better quality at the end of the day than what Mike the Butcher was giving us. Obama will promise 17% drop in greenhouse gases. Can you believe this? At the International Climate Negotiations in Copenhagen? How can he get away with this when we found out that global warming is a fraud just this week? How is it possible for him to get away with this, Beowulf?
He's still trying to impress the world, and I suppose as far as the rest of the world goes, the global warming is still a go. But slowly the realization
it's is not impressing them. They've got billions of dollars that they're going to get. They're going to get control over everyone's life here.
Yeah, well, follow the money. That's what it boils down to. It's about getting money to the right people.
Including NBC, Westinghouse. We know that.
There you go.
Roman Polanski's bail was met with surprise from some legal experts. He's going to be at his posh Alpine chalet after a Swiss court agreed to a $4.5 million bail request by the famed director. The bail is likely to lengthen what is expected to be a fierce battle over whether Polanski should be extradited to L.A. to face sentencing for unlawful intercourse with a 13-year-old girl more than 30 years ago. On the terms of the bail, Polanski would be restricted to a chalet he owns in Gstaad, a ski resort in the foothills of Mont Blanc.
Restricted to a chalet. That's great.
Yeah. The town has long been known as a celebrity hangout. Dmitry Gorin, a former prosecutor who has represented people overseas facing charges in L.A., said he was surprised the court would grant bail, given Polanski's record of fleeing justice. Others agreed. Lori Levinson, a former Fed prosecutor and Loyola law professor, said that it is very rare to get bail in an extradition case, and especially in cases where the person's fled. This is a little like giving bail to O.J. Simpson after the Bronco chase. She said, a Swiss chalet is a lot nicer than a jail here. Details about why the court decided to grant bail to Polanski remain unclear. The Ministry of Justice had argued that Polanski should remain behind bars until extradition is resolved. Switzerland's justice minister told the Swiss national TV that it was not going to appeal the court ruling. It sounds like a payoff to me.
Yeah, Swiss justice system. I guess their cheese isn't the only thing that's full of holes.
That's what came to my mind. Yep. Well, that's the roundup today on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
And his weekly report on the shenanigans of the left coast, here is James Herson.
We can thank Attorney General Eric Holder, supposedly making his decision without breathing a word to his boss. We now have five purported terrorists coming to stand trial in a New York City courtroom for the September 11th attacks. And according to a lawyer for one of the defendants, these former Gitmo prisoners plan to plead not guilty. Why? So they can do just what we knew they would: attack the United States by using this courtroom as a propaganda platform. Scott Fenstermaker, the attorney for a guy named Ali, also known as Anwar al-Baluchi, who is a nephew of the purported 9/11 mastermind, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, I like to call him KSM, Fenstermaker told the New York Times that KSM, Ali, and the others plan to talk about their assessment of American foreign policy. Just what we want to hear. They think they're, what, a combination of a terrorist and Henry Kissinger? And the lawyer said their assessment is negative. What a shock. Don't be surprised if, as this criminal prosecution develops, KSM and company demand that their case be transferred over to Judge Judy. I mean, Judge Judy is famous for her TV courtroom, but Levi Johnston is famous for one reason. He's currently the left's favorite stooge for getting jabs in at Sarah Palin. The concocted celebrity has been all over the entertainment media and will probably be offered his own reality show soon. Johnston is bragging about having secret dirt on Palin, so he's being courted by breathless reporters who claim to want to talk to him about his Playgirl magazine misadventures. In a recent Los Angeles Times opinion piece, it was titled, "Levi Johnston, He's Hot, He's Cute, He's Playing Hardball," with a subtitle that read, "Who Can Resist This Playgirl Posing Bad Boy?" But members of the press aren't the only ones fawning over the sullied dude. Palin's almost son-in-law has been making the L.A. social scene.
Are you kidding?
Johnston recently attended two celeb-packed parties in Hollywood. He was hovering around Us Magazine's annual Hot 100 with two security guards in tow. The crowd he hung with included Adam Lambert, more on him later, Adrina Partridge and Leona Lewis. And that same evening, Johnston was also invited to the Chateau Marmont for GQ's Men of the Year party, where he had a chance to rub elbows with Morgan Freeman, Kobe Bryant, Lindsay Lohan, Seth MacFarlane, and even Clint Eastwood. A kid from the tundra goes from relative obscurity to hobnobbing with Dirty Harry. What a country. The previously mentioned Adam Lambert may have jumped the shark at the American Music Awards that just occurred. Lambert closed the show at a time when children could have been watching with some simulated oral sex from a male backup dancer and some deep kissing with his male keyboardist. Primetime broadcasts have generated fines for profane language or, we remember, the wardrobe malfunction. And under the indecency standards set forth by the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, this was clearly over the line.
I'm sick of this.
The question is whether the current FCC, run by the Obama administration, will take action on Lambert's performance or tell us that it's an artistic expression. Well, ABC was nervous enough to cut the bad stuff from the West Coast broadcast. Speaking of nervous, Al Gore must be sweating, and not from global warming either. Thousands of emails and documents were posted on the internet last week after being hacked from a prominent climate change research center. The hacking and release raise some obvious ethical and even legal questions over the behavior of so-called scientists who advocate the view that human activity is a cause of global warming. The messages sent by climate change researchers show hostility between the scientists that buy into Al Gore's view of the world and those who don't. Included among the emails are references to attempts to silence contrary views by so-called scientists who buy into the global warming theory. There were more than 1,000 emails and more than 2,000 other documents that were taken from the climate research unit at this university in the UK. And the emails show other efforts to have reports from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, a UN group that monitors so-called climate science. These reports show that they wanted to include their own views but exclude others, which means, just what we thought, this has nothing to do with science and everything to do with political power and Al Gore's billion-dollar businesses. Thanks, Michael, for using the scientific method on the radio. And a happy Thanksgiving to you and to the Savage Nation. Back to you, my friend.
Hey, thanks for the report, James. You are in greater danger than you have ever been in your life. Never before in American history has such a small gang of extreme radicals gotten so far, so fast, and taken so much power from the people. And a few months ago I said to you, only God can save us. Remember I said that to you? I gave up on the media. I said to you that when the fourth estate has become the fifth column, all is lost. I warned you about this in 1998. I amalgamated the government with the media because they had become one and the same under Barack Obama. To the 99th percentile, they had become an arm of the government. You had Pravda and Izvestia in the form of NBC and ABC and CBS and CNN. You may as well have seen this published by the government itself. And when anyone stood up in opposition or in questioning or as a dissident, they were attacked, whether it were people on Fox News or in talk radio. They were targeted on an enemy's list by this very dangerous group of people. And if you think I don't understand the danger I am putting myself in by pointing this out every day of my life, you are mistaken. If you think that I'm a fool who doesn't understand that they understand that we stand between them in absolute and total power, I know what danger I'm in. Then why do I do it? I've written one bestseller after another. I've achieved an audience of 10 million a week. My book, Banned in Britain, just came out. I will be vindicated. I can't even tell you what's going on. But very soon you're going to see it. The world will soon hear my story. You'll hear it from Britain to Holland. The world will understand what was done to me, and they'll find out who did it to me. It's all coming very soon. So here we are, sitting here, you know, whatever it is. Most Americans are tied up worrying about whatever, the taxes, that Obama, you know, remember trickle-up? Remember I created the phrase trickle-up poverty? Sure enough, that's what he's doing. I gave it to Tom McCann, but Tom McCann didn't want it because Tom McCann is the Manchurian candidate. Or someone said the Vietnam candidate. I mean, come on. Could have won the election. One blow would have been the end of it. Then we would have had the sad sack John McCain in there. Can you imagine if he had won? What a thought that is. What if McCain actually decided not to take the fall? Like Primo Carnera, you know, he says, no, I can't take the fall. I have honor and dignity. The McCain name means something. I'm not going to take the fall for the establishment. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to use that savage's idea, trickle-up poverty, and I'm going to win. I can't take the fall. And he wins. Now, what if McCain was president? Would it be different today? Yeah, it'd be much different. That's why I had to endorse the shoe salesman at the end. Because at least we wouldn't have the fear of overt Leninism taking over America. It would have been a continuation of soft, you know, Bolshevik America going forward, you know, like a local as opposed to an express train to hell.
Savage.
We've talked about this health care destruction bill, which comes at a cost that we'll be paying for generations. Joining us now from the Cato Institute is Michael Cannon, who will explain the hidden costs of the plan. Michael Cannon, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
In your article, you mentioned the hidden dangers of this health reform bill. Well, what are they? Come on, spell them out.
Well, it's hard to overstate the danger of the Reid health bill. It's really a massive entitlement expansion, probably the largest expansion of government, not just in my lifetime, but in any of our lifetimes. They say that it's going to cost just under $1 trillion. That is absolutely false. The cost is not going to be $1 trillion. It's not even going to be $2 or $2.5 trillion. It's going to be more than that. It could be close to $6 trillion. But we don't know what the actual cost is going to be, because really the most unconscionable part of this whole debate is that Congress has been debating these bills for 157 days now without ever laying eyes on a complete estimate of their cost. So we don't know how much this is going to cost in government spending. We don't know how much it's going to cost in terms of mandated private spending that the government is going to force us to do to purchase health insurance.
Well, what do we actually know?
We do know that there are $500 billion of new taxes in the Reid bill on sick people, on health insurance, on seniors, on medical devices and drugs and so forth. In fact, health insurance gets taxed two separate ways. We also know that those $500 billion in taxes are going to grow. We also know that the spending cuts in this legislation are not going to happen. At the same time, Congress says they're going to cut Medicare and Medicaid spending by $500 billion over 10 years. At the very same time, they're promising us those future spending cuts. They are undoing past promises of spending cuts in those programs. That's what they call the doc fix. What it is another $200 or $300 billion of deficit spending. So the spending cuts are not going to happen. Medicare's chief actuary calls these spending cuts doubtful and unrealistic. And because those cuts aren't going to happen, this is going to blow the Reid bill, like the House bill, is going to blow a huge hole in the budget deficit and add to our already record national debt. That's why middle-of-the-road people like the Washington Post's David Broder says that both of these bills are budget busters. Now, there's this parlor game that economists play where we sit around and we muse about, you know, at what point will the Chinese and other people stop buying our debt? And just how cataclysmic would the fallout be? And this Congress seems hell-bent on finding out the answer to those questions.
What are we going to get for all of this debt?
Well, we're not getting health care reform. All we're getting is failed strategies for reducing health care costs and improving quality. As I mentioned, the spending cuts in this bill are not going to happen. the so-called reforms that are going to improve quality. They're all the same sort of reforms that Congress has tried over and over again and that never work. They have a decades-long record of failure when it comes to improving quality, coordinating care, paying for value, reducing medical errors. These things are not going to happen. There is no reform in this bill. They say that this legislation will curb abusive insurance company practices. This bill is not going to curb those practices. This bill is going to increase and encourage those practices because it's going to say to insurance companies that they have to sell a $50,000 policy for just $10,000. Now, the $50,000 patients then become nothing but a liability to the insurance companies, and they will do everything that they can to avoid those patients or provide them lousy coverage, lousy service, and encourage them to leave and go to another health plan, bring down that competitor's bottom line. So, yes, the government may be able to say an insurance company is not going to be able to turn you away for coverage, but that insurance company can provide you lousy care and lousy service. And so even for sick people, this bill is a bad deal.
Mm-hmm.
And all the complaints that we've heard about abortion, about undocumented immigrants, these are all true. Either we're going to get a bill like the House bill that curtails access to abortion coverage that's available on the private market right now, even for people who want to spend their own money on that coverage. Or we'll get something like the Senate bill that forces taxpayers to pay for other people's abortions. There's no middle ground between those two. We're going to get one or the other. One side is going to be upset, and this is what happens when you insert government into the healthcare system in so pervasive a manner. It ends up making people's decisions for them about abortion and other things. And in the Senate bill, I mentioned undocumented aliens. In the Senate bill, it expands the Medicaid program. Even though it's not making undocumented aliens eligible for that program, some are still going to enroll because there's so much fraud in the Medicaid program. But in the House bill, it's even worse. Not only does the House bill expand Medicaid, but the House bill creates a health insurance exchange where there are hidden subsidies that go from healthy people to sicker people. Those hidden subsidies are going to be available under the House bill to undocumented aliens who are buying insurance in the exchange, even with their own money, because healthy Americans are going to be essentially taxed to subsidize any unhealthy, undocumented aliens that come and purchase insurance in that exchange. So even though no matter how much the supporters of the House legislation protest, that exchange is a welfare magnet. It will encourage people to come to this country just to receive those subsidies.
Are there signs out there that say the rest of the world may not support our debt much longer?
There have been some troubling signs about whether the world is going to keep financing all of this profligate big government spending that's coming out of Washington. When Timothy Geithner a little while ago went to China and was speaking to an audience of students, he said to them, "Your money is safe with the U.S. government." And they laughed at him. That is a very troubling sign. There have been Chinese officials, Chinese financiers, who have grilled the Obama administration about how the administration plans to pay for their health care reforms. That's because the Chinese are starting to get concerned about the U.S. government racking up too much debt. They want to make sure that this legislation will not result in the government racking up even more debt. So I think that there are signs that we could be getting closer to the point where the Chinese and other countries are no longer willing to finance our debt or will require higher rates of interest to finance our debt, which is going to increase government spending and increase taxes even higher.
What have you seen from the public?
The people have been pretty clear ever since August and really before August. Public opinion, if you look at the polls that have been done on the Obama health plan, initially a lot of people supported it and there wasn't much opposition, largely because people didn't know anything about it. But when they've put these ideas to paper, you see something dramatic happening to the polling numbers. The number of people who support it began to decline steadily, slowly but steadily. The share of the population that opposes it shot up. And since this summer, and I'm talking before August, before the town hall meetings in August that got so animated, shall we say, even before that, the Obama health care plan has been unpopular with the American public. There have been more people opposed to it than who support it. There have been, in many polls, it's been a majority of Americans who oppose the Obama health plan. And I think the biggest reason is because they've seen the what President Bush did to the federal budget with the Medicare prescription drug benefit, a huge new entitlement that was not financed, totally deficit, financed only by deficit spending. Then they saw the Bush bailout and President Obama's bailout and the stimulus package, and they see their government just racking up more and more debt and expanding at a breakneck speed, and a lot of Americans are getting very nervous about this, and they should be getting nervous about this, because we're living right now at the expense of our children and grandchildren. Not just living right now, we are bailing out unsuccessful, irresponsible people and passing the bill on to our children and grandchildren. We are making irresponsible commitments, and as the chief actuary of the Medicare program said, with doubtful and unrealistic financing mechanisms, and the bill is going to be passed on to our children and grandchildren. This is, I said before, it's really hard to overstate the danger of this legislation.
Well, what do you think a better solution would be?
Well, look, we need health care reform. We don't have a systemic crisis in our health care system. We've got systemic problems and localized crises where individuals end up without health insurance at the moment they most need their health insurance, when they get sick and lose their jobs. So the solution to that is let people purchase health insurance that doesn't disappear when their job disappears. Let them give them the same tax break on health insurance that they purchase directly from an insurance company that their employer gets. And let people purchase insurance from across state lines so that they can buy an insurance policy with lower premiums because they're able to avoid a lot of the unnecessary regulatory costs that their state imposes on health insurance. If you live in New York, if you live in New Jersey, if you live in Massachusetts, this would be very valuable because those states have some of the most costly regulations in the country. And those two steps, just giving that same – extending the same tax break that employers get to individuals and letting people purchase insurance from across state lines, you could cover tens of – millions of uninsured Americans like that, and it wouldn't cost the taxpayers a dime. There would be no new taxes, no new government spending involved. And yet, here we are throwing trillions upon trillions of dollars at this healthcare sector without doing anything to make it more efficient, without doing anything to reduce the cost of healthcare and health insurance, which is what these two reforms would do. Instead, we're just shifting the cost. We're subsidizing Paul by robbing Peter. And as time goes on, more and more people are going to figure out that, wait a second, under this arrangement, I'm not Paul. I'm not the one who's being subsidized. I'm Peter. I'm the one who's being robbed.
Michael Cannon, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
My pleasure. Anytime.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
Seen Obama's plummeting poll numbers. A lot of it has to do with his dithering on Afghanistan, the bad economy, the no jobs. But the war that nobody seems to understand is why we're there, really. Here's the great one himself talking about Afghanistan.
I will be making an announcement to the American people about how we intend to move forward. I will be doing so shortly. I think that the review that we've gone through has been comprehensive and extremely useful, and has brought together my key military advisors, but also civilian advisors. I can tell you, as I've said before, that it is in our strategic interest, in our national security interest, to make sure that Al-Qaeda and its extremist allies cannot operate effectively in those areas. We are going to dismantle and degrade their capabilities and ultimately dismantle and destroy their networks. And Afghanistan's stability is important to that process.
What's important is our stability. I would say let Afghanistan fend for itself. Why should we spill American blood to help them? I still don't know.
I've also indicated that after 8 years, some of those years in which we did not have, I think, either the resources or the strategy to get the job done, it is my intention to finish the job. I think that's a sufficient preview to last until after Thanksgiving. After Thanksgiving. And I'm sure that at that point, if there are further questions, that that we'll be answering them to the satisfaction, not just of you, but to the satisfaction of the American people.
Oh, you have to wait until then? You have to wait to tell us what you're going to do until the entire nation is in a tryptophan-induced stupor? Well, maybe you can tell them about your global warming conspiracy at the same time. Here's Senator James Inhofe talking about the emails that revealed a scam of global warming.
4 years ago, I made a speech on the Senate floor that almost mirrors what has been discovered in the last few days. And that is, I'd been approached for quite a while, many years now, since Kyoto, with really well-known scientists who have said that they were not able to have proper input, and several of them quit the IPCC, which is the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change that started this whole thing. So I think they've been cooking science for a long time. Now that this has come out, and if you go back and look at the speech I made on the Senate floor 4 years ago, this really just documents what I was suspected at that time. I would say, yes, this was stopped. I think that cap and trade was stopped anyway. People are just not ready to pass the largest tax increase in the history of America on something that's not well-founded.
And Inhofe wants to investigate.
I'm the ranking member of the Environment Public Works Committee. We have sent out letters today to a number of government agencies, to the IGs, as a part of the investigation into the disclosure of emails and so forth. Also, we've sent them to the scientists who have whose names have appeared on some of the documents that have been revealed the last few days. And many of these scientists are scientists I'm very familiar with. They're the insiders of the IPCC that I think all along have been trying to avoid the real science in this whole notion about global warming.
Amazing. You know what else in order to investigate? Hollywood moron idiot Ed Begley Jr., who went crazy on Fox.
I don't think geologists should write papers about being an actor or a newscaster, nor should... don't get your information from me, folks, or any newscaster. Get it from people with PhD after the name, peer-reviewed studies at the keyboards. And if it comes out in peer-reviewed studies that there are some cooking in the books, that will come out.
It's this kind of idiocy that's going to have green police knocking at your door if we don't do something about it. Checking out your carbon footprint and how many fluorescent light bulbs you have in your refrigerator. My battle to free my name in Britain is intimately tied up with Obama, Hillary Clinton, Gordon Brown, how one man has stood firm against an entire government to free my name from a list of murderers and terrorists is a story that will be told for decades to come. And I'm reaching out to people of all faiths, all political parties, and all creeds who value your right to free speech and the sanctity of independent thought. But I want to tell you that the political crisis that we're facing worldwide, that is running rampant in international politics, that is running rampant in America, the censorship being used by outright Marxist regimes in power, and the trend of globalism that would like to impose censorship in America, is what this book is all about. And I lay out the intricate chain of events that resulted from a silent approval of dictatorial powers right here in America, where first free speech was removed, and then freedom of assembly will follow, and so on until the entire national infrastructure will be eroded. And I am warning you, in my book, Banned in Britain, about all of these things. And I expose the secret emails. It also includes the speech that I was to have given at the Cambridge Union that was blocked at the last minute, again by nefarious individuals. You have to understand that I'm the only member of the U.S. media ever blacklisted from a Western nation. You should understand that my being banned from visiting Britain in May of 2009 has made me the poster child for free speech in the entire West. And anyone in America concerned about a cultural shift towards totalitarianism and your rights to freedom of expression, and for people listening to this show around the world, I will tell you that my book, Banned in Britain, is the best document you can have in order to defend yourself against these evil people who we call globalists, but who others call by other name. I also want to conclude this by telling you that in mid-2009, the worldwide media attention concerning this ban which did not occur in the United States, by the way. I have worldwide following because of this, but not in the United States of America. Anyway, I suggest you buy a copy of Banned in Britain while you still can. It's a fabulous book to read, and it's an important document. It's not simply a picture of a pretty guy with a pretty dog. All the stuff that we did when we were young, when you get older, you have to pay for. When you're young, you don't even pay for it. When you're older, you pay for it. The tooth came out. You had to put a titanium thing in. All from a thing in a hallway in the Bronx. Would you believe it? From years and years and years ago. I can still remember the punch. I saw stars. You ever get hit in the nose? Did you ever get punched in the nose? You know, until you're punched in the nose, you don't know what reality is. It reminds me of a story that I told you only once in 15 years. A man goes to Einstein after Einstein published a theory of general relativity, and he says, Herr Einstein, there is no reality. There is no reality. I agree with you. It's all imaginary. Whereupon Albert Einstein jumps up, slaps the man in the face, and says to him, "Why did you do that?" The man says. He says, "Is there reality now?" Of course there's reality.
Savage.